Hey, it's Jake, and today I am joined with the hilarious TikTok creator, Sean Barry Parsons. You may know him as his hilarious characters that he plays, all strong women in their own right. My personal favorite, of course, is Helen Cumlicker, but there is Loretta Barnett, Camilla Moretti, which is based off of his mother. Don't forget about the bonus episode on Patreon. After this episode, head over to patreon.com/heyitsjakepod, and for $10 a month, you get bonus episodes with each guest episode. Don't forget, in the show notes, there are links to everything discussed. Thank you for listening, and let's get on to the interview. All right, everyone, I am here today with Sean Barry Parsons from TikTok. He is at Sean Barry Parsons, and it's Sean with an E.
Sean with an E, like Liza with a Z.
How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you, Jake?
I'm doing all right. I've been watching you since the spring. Like, your characters are hilarious, so we'll definitely jump into that. First, I just kind of want to get to know, like, where you're from, how were you, like, when you were younger, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I grew up in a very lovely Irish-Italian Catholic household in southern New Jersey, right outside of Philadelphia. Everybody in New Jersey gives their proximity to either Philadelphia or New York. I grew up about 15 minutes outside of Philly. That's where I come from, just, you know, middle class. Suburbia. It's a lovely area. When I say lovely, I mean it's terrible. So that's where I grew up. You know, had a pretty standard childhood. I come from a very big family, second and third generation Americans. So there's a lot of big characters, a lot of, you know, connection to, you know, Ireland and Italy. And I grew up, you know, in a very pretty diverse area, which I love. You know, now looking back, you know, there's a very large Jewish population where I grew up. So that was a big part of growing up. And there's a lot of Italian people that, you know, were sometimes first generation, second generation Americans. So, you know, you have that very stereotypical big Italian American childhood. And then you have like the quiet, stern Irish people that I grew up with too. So, I've been growing up around characters pretty much my entire life. And my family is full of characters. The one that I do, Camilla Moretti, is it just in fact my mother, which she knows about.
And what does she think about that?
She hates it because Camilla has a big fucking mole on her face. I'm not sure if we're allowed to curse.
Yeah, you can.
The first time I showed her, she was like, what the fuck is this? That's not me. She's like, I don't have a big fucking mole on my face. Why? This doesn't even sound like me. But yeah, that's my mother.
You grew up with a bunch of characters, and you said in your family and everything. Did you stand out as like the funny one or?
Yeah, I mean, I've literally been putting on one-man shows since I was a child. My sister is a dancer. She's very, very talented. But other than that, pretty much everybody just kind of is more, what does Britney Spears say? There's two types of people in the world, the ones that entertain and the ones that observe. I'm a put-on-a-show kind of gal. So that's just what I've been doing since I was a little kid. I used to, you know, interrupt my teachers in school and say like, would you mind if I did like a song or like a dance number? And they would be like, yeah, sure. Cause they were just like, you know, 30-year-old young women that were like, yeah, just let the gay kid dance for the class. Who cares? So yeah, been performing from a very young age. And then I started doing theater when I was about 11 years old.
Talking about school, I've been following you on Instagram as well. And I feel like you, like, did you do really well in school? Because, like, I feel like you have, like, your story, some of the stuff you say, I'm like, wow, he's got, like, a lot of facts, a lot of knowledge.
I loved school. I really did. I grew up in a family that was kind of just like, you know, if you pass, you pass. But for me, like the world of academia was a really good escape for me as a little kid because I loved it and I loved reading and I loved learning and I loved going there every day. I was absolutely the teacher's pet. Like I wanted to be her best friend as a little kid and I wanted to just soak up everything that my teachers knew growing up. And I love, you know, I do love more traditional, you know, like learning methods. I always say like I have no street smarts at all. Like I could never repair a car, but if you want to talk about European history, like I can go on for hours. So I'm totally like just like that type of like book smart guy. But yeah, no, I love school. I love certain subjects. I'm definitely, I don't know which side of the brain it is, but whatever one handles like humanities and languages and like arts, that's where I excel. I can't do math. I cannot do basic math.
Yeah, same here.
I'm a waiter, so I can find a percentage of anything. I've done that for years, so I can definitely do that.
I think you mentioned something about going back to work and everything.
Oh, yes.
How was that after
Oh, you know, it's a whole new world. It really is. It's a little scary, gotta be honest. Waiting for me has always been, it's a survival job. It's not anything that I take too seriously. It's easy in New York City. So, you know, it's always just been like something that I did in between gigs. Yeah, I kind of feel like a dental hygienist at work now. You know, I have a face shield and a mask and two pairs of gloves, and people are just, you know, sticking forks and knives in their mouth because they can't eat a piece of fucking salmon at home for a few more months. So, you know, we all gotta put our lives on the line so that they can, you know, enjoy sea bass. That's not to discourage people from going out. It's just, I mean, I think it's really more a problem of our government. I mean, people don't have an option right now. If they, you know, chose instead of like mysterious corporations to give billions of dollars in relief to and actually helped out small businesses, maybe, you know, froze a rent or a mortgage like other countries have done, these businesses could close down. You could give emergency unemployment to people that are really like down and out and say, listen, at least until like next spring, maybe the end of winter, just stay home and we'll all stay home and we can just eliminate that risk. That's just not the country that we live in, unfortunately. People got to go back to work and these restaurants don't want to close their doors. So it's a double-edged sword. You know, you put people, both the guests and the workers, in kind of in a risky situation. Yeah, I mean, you also have to do it to survive so that when things bounce back, hopefully you still have a business to return to. People are surviving, adapting, and overcoming, especially here in New York. Like that is, you know, you adapt and you overcome and you find a way to make it work. And that's what New Yorkers do.
Are the customers in general doing like what they're supposed to do, like masks and all of that, or have you had
Well,
anybody?
I work on the Upper East Side, so people are, I would say, closer to death than the rest of the city already, on a good day. So our, you know, we have a much older clientele. I would say people like in their 80s, like mid to late 80s, that dine with us, which I love because they're, you know, they're just wealths of stories and they're always funny. And even when they're like super mean, like I still think it's funny. No, so they take a lot of precautions, but younger people, no, they're just like spitting on the table and French kissing and, you know, putting all the knives and forks in their mouth and just, you know, it's gross.
When you were younger, did you like, since you were always been on the show, did you know you wanted to be a comedian or actor?
When I was a little kid, I actually, well, when I was a little kid, I actually wanted to be a teacher. That was like my first goal. I did not actually ever plan to go into the arts professionally. It was more something that I just really liked to do. It was like my release. It was very cathartic for me. You know, being a closeted little kid, I had to, you know, put on a show and pretend to be a certain way everywhere else. But when I was on stage, what I was trying to hide from the world was celebrated. You know, everybody loved it. And it actually, you know, worked for me in a lot of ways. I always planned to be a teacher. And honest to God, in the back of my mind, like even if I, you know, made so much money that I would never have to work again, I've always planned that like I would like to return to academia and teach in some capacity because I just think it's the most noble profession. And teachers have changed my life. You know, I have such close relationships with teachers, especially in high school and college. They've really changed the course of my life. And actually, because I had such great teachers that took so much of their free time to, you know, put on shows and really dedicate, you know, a lot of time outside of school to theater, that kind of changed the course of what I wanted to do with my life. And that, you know, really accelerated me into the arts. You know, I didn't go to school for acting. I had a full scholarship to college, but it was academic. So I had to study certain fields. I did political science and international relations. I have a degree in that. Because I graduated without, you know, the just crippling burden of student debt, that was when I really decided, okay, I'm in a position right now where I can either go to a graduate program and really set a course for myself, or I can just, you know, take a risk, move to New York, which I've always wanted to do regardless, and just, you know, try it, you know, because if I didn't, I would regret it the rest of my life. And that is not how I live.
You took that risk. I mean, a lot of people don't take
I
that
mean, you know,
risk.
I could have gone to law school and I guess just drank myself to death because that's what I would have done. But, you know, that's not for me to stare down the barrel of a gun and see exactly what the next 40 years of my life are going to look like. You know, I'd rather have the uncertainty.
If you are looking at something, you know that is not going to make me happy. It's much
Yeah,
better, I
not at
feel like,
all.
than to go to the, well, I don't know what's going to happen, but happiness has to be that way, so.
Yeah, or I mean, just even like the mystery of not knowing what's going to happen. Why not? Roll the dice. You only live once.
COVID's been good for you, right?
COVID's been risk. Great. COVID's been great. You know, you only have so much time when New York City is up and running as normal. A lot of time to focus on sketch comedy, which I didn't really have the time for previously. I would do shows and I was a stand-up comedian, which was going well. But, you know, those are little small increments. So to do the sketch comedy from home, even just, you know, minute long stuff on my phone has been amazing. It's been a lot of fun to stretch that, to, you know, flex that muscle a little bit.
Were you on TikTok before March?
No, I had seen little snippets and like people that were posting their TikToks to Instagram. And I thought, okay, well, it's just like teenagers doing dances. Like that's all I'd ever seen. It was just like choreographed dance numbers from like tweens. And I was like, this is bordering on, you know, pedophilia. And it just didn't seem like it was an app for me at all. And I started to post different characters on my Instagram stories. And I had a couple friends that are a little younger than I am. And they were like, you need to get on TikTok. And they started sending me comedy stuff. And it was like, some of it was really funny. And I was like, oh, fuck, I had no idea. Like, Gen Z is out there, man. They have like this absurdist, Dada, surrealism content that like, it makes me cackle. And it's just irreverent, but it's also all like based in like our own sad reality and like how the world works. So I realized that there was an audience for short form comedy on TikTok. And I just started playing around with it because I was bored at home and I had absolutely nothing else to do.
I saw your first post was April 5th. It was Gina takes on COVID.
Oh, yeah.
I had not seen that one till I was like looking through all of your posts, and I was like, okay, that's funny. I see like where you got started. Like,
yeah. So funny story. I actually started TikTok on April 4th, and in one day, TikTok banned me from the app.
Oh.
I got banned from TikTok in not even 24 hours. I have this one character. She's like an old, like, you know, like New York type lady, and she complains about things, and she was watching the Madonna Justify My Love music video, and it was a snippet of her watching this music video. And if you don't, or if you're not aware of that music video, because, you know, you're not of a certain age, it's very risque. It's basically like a BDSM hotel somewhere randomly. It's in black and white, and MTV used to not be able to play it until after midnight, but that was in like 1991. Yeah. So I figured this is not risque, you know, like who cares? But apparently TikTok runs by MTV's 1991 after midnight rule, and they sent me a message saying that it was taken down and that I was banned from posting for 2 weeks. And I sent them back a letter in their community guidelines appeals, and I said, this is not risque by 2020 standards. I was like, I have seen many videos where half naked girls are literally dancing and they're probably 12 or 13 years old. So I'm not sure why this was taken down. And they immediately said a thing back that was like, you have violated multiple community guidelines and your account will be deleted. And I was just like, oh, fuck. Like, it hasn't even been 24 hours. So I deleted it. I deleted that. I made a new account. I changed everything in my socials to just Sean Barry Parsons to make that brand. And then I put up Gina Fontaine. That character, that was the Instagram story character that made people want me to go on TikTok. Gina is the most vile woman in Catahoula Parish, Louisiana. And I have not been able to fully form her because she's a filter. It's an Instagram filter on my face. So I need to figure out a way to make that into a real thing. But Gina is coming to TikTok. My friends are just like, Sean, she's disgusting and you need to put her on TikTok. But yeah, she's vile. But yeah, Gina gave everybody COVID. Everybody who wrongs her in the town got COVID.
It had me laughing. It is kind of funny that you started it as a filter, and then, yeah, it's like, yeah, you do have to, like, try and figure out, oh, how can I bring this from the filter, like, just because of the way...
Gina will be tough, but she'll be worth it. She's she's the next one. I actually wasn't planning on doing Melania Trump as the next character, but people were just, like, messaging me about it, and basically the skit wrote itself, so I was like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I saw that one. That was pretty good as well. I think all of your characters, I think what's kind of cool about them is they're all very out there, but then, like you said, they're grounded grounded in like reality. The Dayton County Parks Department in Florida, like I lived in Florida and we all see the news about Florida. I picture the small town that she's, you know, that this lady is, you know, in, and I'm like, okay, all that seems reasonable that it would, you know, be happening.
The thing that I love about Loretta and that I've spoken to people about and from other, you know, parts of the country is that I think every small town has a Loretta, whether you're in like Florida, Wisconsin, Nevada, or even New Jersey. I know that lady. That woman in my mind is the secretary of St. Joan of Arc Church that I attended. Like, I know exactly who that woman is. I think everybody knows, like, let's say, you know, a late middle-aged woman who, you know, is kind of sassy and like runs her own little small world and is very in charge of, like, she's a very big fish in a very small pond. You know, that's how I describe Loretta. I like that character a lot. I think it works only because Loretta is also in on the joke. You know, she participates mm-hmm. in the crazy events. She's a good time gal. She's not talking down to the people in the town. She takes it very seriously. You know, nobody's an idiot. She's not making fun of anybody. This is her job and she loves it. And she really takes pride in the events in Dayton County.
Unless you don't like Willie Nelson.
Well, that is a very, don't even talk about it. Don't ever say anything negative about the redheaded stranger ever to Loretta Barnett. She's his number one fan.
Where did the Hell Satan part come? Like, where'd you even think to add that?
The first time I did Loretta, it was early on in quarantine, and I have all of these terrible, terrible character wigs, which you have seen, and they've all just become the different characters. And I was cleaning out my closet, and I was going to throw away the Loretta wig, and I put it on, and then I have my big hexagon, like, rose-colored glasses, and I was like, oh, that's a fine Southern woman. That'll be a beautiful Southern woman. And then I just put on a little lipstick, and I sat down with my sweater that said Paris on it, because I just thought, I think a Southern lady would wear a sweater that says, announces to the world she's been to Paris. Basically, all of my characters are on the phone because I had to be alone in quarantine. And my roommate at the time, just a shit actress. She has no star quality whatsoever. So she did not play a character. I had to think up character games in my head where this person is talking to someone on the phone or yelling at a character that is off screen. So in the early ones, Camilla's yelling at her husband, Dom Moretti, but Dom never responds. Dom is like in another world and Camilla's, you know, present. So basically I thought, okay, well, she could be on the phone. She could be a receptionist. Okay, well, she could work for something. Everything's being canceled right now, which I thought, I'm like, okay, so she could tell people things are canceled. And then I just thought of all these crazy fucking events. And I was like, well, I guess the Parks Department would handle events. So I made up Dayton County because I actually fucked up in my head. I thought I was saying Dade County, which is like Miami-Dade County, which is a real place in Florida, but it's actually a gift that I messed up because having an imaginary place in Florida, I can do whatever I want. And it's just like some random small county in between like Polk, Citrus, and Dixie County in Florida. It's just like a random place. So and that was Loretta. And it just kind of, I sat down. The first one, it was totally improv. I was just messing around. And at the end, I just thought it'd be funny. She was like, Hail Satan, because it's, you know, like some crazy town. And why not let that be her sign off? But now my backstory behind it is really just that Loretta is a pioneer of free speech. And in her backstory and like personal videos I've done, it's just been like somebody told her that she had to sign off with have a very Dayton day. And she thought that was fucking stupid. So to prove him wrong and, you know, exert her free speech, she now says Hail Satan. And everybody in the town loves it.
I actually wondered if you purposely did a fake county in Florida so that you could kind of get away without someone being like, that's my county.
It was the first time I had no plans of making a second Loretta. It was just something that I sat down. It made me laugh. You know, that's my number one rule to comedy. If it makes me laugh, it goes in. So I just sat down and I did it. But it was total blessing that I messed up.
You've already talked a little bit about Camilla Moretti. They're funny because, again, kind of like you were saying, like people know a Loretta. Like we all know like a woman who's, you know, she's home. She's got her husband. They've been married for years. And, you know, she's on Facebook watching the comments. Like, I mean, we all kind of do that. But like, you know, like she... The one where she's talking about Facebook, she's like, I'm staying in for the night. This is getting good. I'm like, that's funny.
Facebook has become a thing that is like, it's totally an addiction, I think, for middle-aged people or like slightly older people. I spend time with my aunts and my family is a lot of Camillas. They may not have that strong of an accent, but it's really just like that attitude. Whenever they're together, they're just all silent on their iPads, scrolling on Facebook and like, talking about like news articles, which are clearly like planted by Russian operatives, or like little like jokes or memes and like, or like riddles. And they'll just like ask each other the riddles, like as they scroll their page. So that was what inspired that sketch. And like, it's literally just like a gossip rag to them, because like they'll see the comments and they'll just be like, oh my God, can you believe she said that? What a fucking bitch. Oh my God. You know, like that type of thing.
And then they're like, happy birthday.
Exactly.
To the same person.
Happy birthday in a message on no one's wall. Just like out into the universe, like they're screaming into the void. They've written it on nowhere. The comment section has ruined America. Everybody thinks their opinion matters. And, you know, it's like, it really doesn't in the grand scheme of things, because like me screaming online in all caps at, you know, a woman across the country, we're not changing each other's opinions. We're just like venting. Like we're just getting out our frustrations, because like where else do you put them? I guess people just used to scream like with their husband or their wife, like in a small, like while they watch the evening news. Like that's what my parents did growing up. They just like yelled at the TV while, you know, ABC was on in Philadelphia. So I don't know. They just can say or vent whatever they want. But it's weird. It's really weird to me.
It's given everybody a platform.
And everybody gets into fights. Like why? Just scroll past it. Just scroll past it. Like I see heinous shit all the time. You think I'm going to get in a random online fight with somebody in the fucking comment section? Are you kidding me? Live your life. And these people just sit around with a fucking magnum of barefoot Chardonnay in their hand, and they just like yell at strangers online. That's not a way to live. Go outside, turn the laptop off.
And it can be over anything, even like, what cat food should I feed my own cat? And they like,
oh my God,
there's like a fight over that.
I have friends that are, you know, young moms, and the screenshots that they post of moms like shaming and yelling at each other for like the slightest missteps because they disagree with how they're parenting their kids. I'm like, you are on, where is your child right now? You're on Facebook all fucking day. Where is your kid?
The next character that she's my favorite, I have to tell you. It's Helen Cumlicker.
Yes, the Grand Dame of the Upper East Side. Yes.
Like, that character is, I don't know. I know it's not TikTok's favorite character, because you've had issues with her videos, right?
Oh, TikTok does not like Miss Cumlicker. No, the communist Chinese definitely have a problem with Helen Cumlicker. I honest to God, I don't know what the problem is that TikTok has with her. She's the only character that I've ever had that's been pulled or muted. I have yet to uncover what the TikTok community guidelines are. I've spoken to friends that, you know, have much more followers than I do, and I've spoken to friends that have much less followers than I do, and they've all had videos pulled for almost no reason at all. I mean, no reason at all. Sometimes it'll be months later. You know, I have a friend who has over 200,000 followers, and her most popular video was pulled 2 months later, and they said it violated something. And it was totally inane. You know, it was not anything that was even slightly offensive or close to their community guidelines. And then you have people that are actually promoting hate and violence against, you know, marginalized groups, like literally videos that show like effigies of, you know, homosexuals or, you know, African Americans being like beaten or dragged or like killed. And I've reported those, and they say this has not violated a community guideline, but a gay man in a wig cursing about a restaurant, that gets pulled immediately. You know, we can't have that on TikTok. But yes, TikTok does not care for Miss Cumlicker.
Censorship on TikTok is like crazy. I've noticed here lately, like some hashtags will randomly not be working.
Oh yeah, what's that called? A shadow ban. They institute shadow bans on things all the time. And the way that you can tell, just for people listening to this, if you're curious, go to your hashtags or type in maybe a random hashtag, one that definitely wouldn't be used. And then once you post your video, click on it. And if your video does not pop up under that hashtag, you've been shadow banned. And I honestly have done that for a test, because sometimes, you know, you'll get videos that immediately within like an hour have like 2,000 views. And then sometimes you'll get ones that you put up and it'll be like 200 views. And I'm like, all right, well, that's a little odd, because, you know, I have X amount of followers and this is what I normally see. And if you violated community guidelines, they kind of put you in a timeout for a day or two. Honestly, Jake, what I think the reason behind Helen is because she curses too much. Apparently, from what I've read, and I've seen like YouTube things that people have put up, and they're, you know, very popular creators, like in like the millions of followers. And they've said that if you curse too much, the Chinese apparently do not like swearing or cuss dancing at all. And basically, they curate TikTok to be like, they have a very specific vision of what they want it to look like when people are randomly scrolling. And they want it to be nice. They want it to be cooking. They want it to be pets. They want it to be crafts and dancing, you know, just like very congenial things. So if you put up something that maybe doesn't actually violate their guidelines, but is seen as, you know, too much cursing, or we don't want to see a man in a wig, or we don't want to see this like weird video that you've put up, they'll just suppress it. Luckily, I have really loyal followers, and you know, they always comment on the videos. There's about 100 people that I would say have been commenting on my videos since like April, and like I know them and I talk with them, and they follow me to Instagram and I chat with them. Because of that, you know, they keep pushing out the video just because it gets the engagement, but yeah, it's never pushed out on a large scale. And the one time it was with the second Helen Kumlicker video, about 6 days later, they removed the sound, and that video was at 500,000 views and had 100,000 likes, and they just took that sound away immediately. And there's nothing wrong with that video. It doesn't violate community guidelines. It's just an old woman cursing.
How did you come up with the character?
Well, Helen Kumlicker is a very real woman. So I work in a restaurant on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, which is a little notorious for, let's just say, more conservative, stuffy, older women, old money, you know, like, you know, the richest of the rich in New York on the Upper East Side. But it's a generally, you know, more mature clientele, and they, you know, are very, you know, reserved, but they're also very particular, and they're very blunt, and they're very, they have no problem telling you a problem that they have with you. And I work in a restaurant that's kind of in the heart of the Upper East Side, and a lot of much older women I take care of. Helen Kumlicker, is her look is based on a woman named Sandra. Sandra is a see you next Tuesday. She's the worst woman that I wait on. She has that like stark blonde, rigid hair. She has copious amounts of blush. She wears the most disgusting frosted peach lipstick. And she always has like Liz Taylor, like Cleopatra eyeliner on. She's never eaten salt. She hasn't had butter since Reagan was in office. She basically just has dry kale. When she orders mint tea, she literally wants one leaf of mint in her tea. And the first time I did it, she's like, I'll have a mint tea with light mint. And I was like, absolutely. I came back. She looked at me, popped open the teapot, and she said, do you think that's light mint? And I was like, okay, well, how many would you like? She's like, I want one or two sprigs. And that's the type of lady. So her look and kind of her demeanor is based on her. But the absolute growling of Helen Kumlicker is based on a woman named Helen. I won't say her last name, but she is an absolute pit viper. And she cannot be handled by almost anybody else that I work with. But I love her. I love her. I love these women. You know, that's the funny part about it. I don't hate them. I don't like, oh God, I have to wait on them. I'm like, this is gold, because these women have reached a point in their life where they don't have to give a fuck about anything. And really, we should all try to reach that, like in our 20s and 30s, like ask for what you want, say what you're thinking, you know, live your truth, do whatever you want, because they're at the point in their life where they're like, what do I have to lose? You know, I'm 75 years old. Who gives a fuck what you think about me? And it's quite admirable, honestly. It's beautiful to see people reach that point in their life.
You had apartment issues when you were moving. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh God. It was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare, but it's over now, you know? But yeah. So my advice to everybody, regardless of where you live, when you go to a new apartment to look, you have to look as though you're buying that apartment. Open the cabinets, open your dishwasher, open under the sink. Ask the people moving out why they're moving out, because I didn't do those things. And I did not see that my apartment was actually owned by roaches. It was absolutely absurd. It was so gross. I've seen bugs in New York. You know, I live in New York City. There are bugs in apartments. It happens occasionally. This was a full-scale ownership. Like, I was writing my checks out to the roaches. They were my landlord, and it was bad. I was in that apartment for 5 days. The morning I woke up and I saw one skittering across my duvet cover, that was it.
Oh, God.
Sean was out. Sean was done. I literally put all my shit, all my fabric stuff in plastic bags, and I put it in a storage unit around the corner.
Wow.
Yeah, it was bad.
So now that you found a spot and you're good?
Yes, I'm on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. It's a dream. It's an absolute dream. I'm amongst my people. I can just sit on the corner near the Starbucks and just people watch all day. It's amazing.
Your Instagram, for me, as someone who follows you on TikTok, following you on Instagram is like bonus material. Like, like your stories, I talked about your stories, like you kind of like, I like kind of like pop off on people and like just tell mm-hmm. them, you know, how it is. And then I just, I don't know. I feel like you get a little bit more of an insight in like to who you are, like, you know, your interests and stuff.
Yeah. It's been a little weird in that regard, only because while I do put up, you know, my comedy material, that is my personal Instagram. You know, this is not my professional Instagram. This is the Instagram that I've had, you know, for years, since I think like 2015, mm-hmm. you know, so like 5 years. So, you know, people can scroll through almost my entire life. You know, if you want to take the time, you can look at everything that I've posted, you know, in the past like 5 years. It's kind of been a double-edged sword because I get angry messages from people sometimes saying like, how dare you talk that way about the president? Or how dare you share your political views? I'm here for comedy. And I politely tell them to go fuck themselves. It's really a thing where I'm just like, first of all, no one's keeping you here. Like, you can click that little blue button that says unfollow at absolutely any moment. But also, I don't know why you thought a gay man who spends his free time in makeup and wigs was like some staunch conservative or like, you know, towing the line politically. Like, clearly, I think, you know, where some of my politics lie. And like 90% of everybody's like super cool. But like when I first started getting the flood of followers from TikTok to Instagram, I don't think people were expecting that this was my personal Instagram. Mm-hmm. Like, and I will put up whatever the fuck I want. And I don't really care if you don't agree with my politics. If you want to stay here for the videos, that's fine. If you're a fucking, you know, conservative snowflake who gets upset if I disagree with, you know, your, you know, leader, then, you know, you just got to deal with it. I don't know what to tell you, but let me just tell you, those conservatives are some fucking snowflakes, right?
Considering they call, you know, liberal snowflakes, yeah.
They're snowflakes. I call them that all the time. I'm just like, you literally, I mean, like, honest to God, like, just the littlest thing that I say, people just lose their mind. When I posted after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, I put up a video that said, everybody's got to get out and vote. Do not, I don't want to fucking hear it from anybody this year. Like, your friends' civil liberties depend on it. And if you don't vote, you're just agreeing with the status quo. And this woman sent me a mile long message about how I was a communist and about how I was threatening the lives of Americans and that I needed to apologize to my fans because she could not be the only one that was offended by it. And I politely told her that I am an American. I'm a free to say whatever I want. You are free to agree with me and you are free to unfollow, but I will never apologize for my political views. Why? Because like you said, I am an American and that sword cuts both ways. You're free to disagree with me and I'm free to say whatever the fuck I want. But the bottom line there is respect. And I think that's what's missing in a lot of those political conversations.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, until yesterday, hadn't noticed your save stories about where you were roasting the celebrities. I thought that was good. Yeah. Even some of the celebrities like that I like, I was like, that's true. Like, I'm like, I never really thought about it. That's true. That's how they are.
I don't really hate any of those celebrities. You know, I actually feel terrible for celebrities. I really do. You know, I don't actually hate any of those people. It's just a matter of, you know, it's roasting them. I can, yeah. You can roast anybody. I'd roast my family members. I'd roast myself. You know, you can always find jokes or faults with people to make fun of them. But yeah, I don't actually hate celebrities. I feel really bad for celebrities.
It's funny, as I've gotten older talking about stuff that, you know, you dream to be a celebrity, I've kind of like been like, I'm kind of glad I'm not a celebrity. Like, you know, like, no. They can't go anywhere. They, every little thing they say is monitored. Yeah.
Oh, I couldn't imagine actually being like an A-list celebrity, like an Angelina Jolie or like a Brad Pitt. Like, how the fuck do you leave your house? Like, what do? Do you just stay inside all day? You can't even trust people that you're friends with because they could leak your story. And then randomly, like, your conversation about whatever is splashed on Page Six. Like, get the fuck out of here. My God.
And that's why Sia wears that wig, even though you can find pictures of her.
I've always said that I, you know, if I were to attain any level of fame, I want it to be one of those things where people are like in a coffee shop and they're like, I know that guy, he's in a lot of stuff, but that's it. I don't want them to know my name. I just want to be like creatively working, happy, you know, working on projects, maybe writing my own stuff. Like, that's all I want. I would never, ever want to be like on the cover of People magazine.
That kind of leads me into my next question. What is your, right now, it can change, but what is your goal with TikTok and Instagram, and like, where would you like a year from now or 5 years from now to see it go?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to marry the Prince of Monaco. I would like to be on the French Riviera, not a care in the world, and never having to put on a wig again. No, that's a joke. For me, it's been a lot of fun to put out these characters. My goal in everything has always been to be working steady in a creative field where I have some control and I'm working with other people that make me laugh. You know, that I'm writing comedy with other people that make me laugh. It would be a dream to have a career in my mind like Tracy Ullman, who's a big, big inspiration for me. Growing up, you know, those female character actresses and comedians like Sherry O'Terry was like so influential for me as a kid. Molly Shannon is a goddess. You know, I was obsessed with Molly Shannon as a kid. Anna Gasteyer is amazing. Rachel Dratch, Tina Fey, you know, all those SNL ladies from the mid to late 90s, early 2000s, they really shaped how I view comedy. But Tracy Ullman was different for me because, one, I should not have been watching that show. I was probably like 7 or 8 years old, and it's highly inappropriate. She does amazing character work, and I've really, after I got like a little repertoire of characters, I kind of tried to model what I was doing after the show Tracy Takes On, which was on HBO in the mid 90s, where she just has little vignettes. You know, every episode had a theme, and then she gave her characters takes on those vignettes, on those themes and little vignettes. And she's just so amazing, and she can do anything, and she's got such an amazing range. She can do any accent. So that's really what I would like. I'd love a show where, you know, once a week, I could just put out little vignettes, you know, little insights into these characters' lives. I could work with a really team of funny people to create them, have, you know, creative control, and just put out stuff to make people laugh. You know, that's the biggest benefit of comedy to me. I really do believe laughter is medicine, and I would love to have a product where people are like, God, I look forward to that coming out every week because I can just fucking, you know, get a glass of wine and zone out and forget about shit for a little bit.
That's a great answer. That was like that's awesome. My goal. Like,
I want something that isn't too big. I want it to have like a niche audience. The most amazing thing from TikTok is that I'm not mainstream on the app, which I love. Mm-hmm. I love that I have this alt queer, really intelligent, mostly female, gay, just like kind of like theater geek, band kid, like nerd audience that like, that's who I was in high school. That is like the type of comedy that I make. I love the group of people that have found me on TikTok, and I would love to produce something that is like, can go like almost like a John Waters type audience. Mm-hmm. You know, like it, you know, it gets out to people, but it's not for everybody. And I say that about my comedy. Like, I don't make mainstream comedy. You probably won't get it, but it's not for everybody, because if you make something for everybody, I think you're not actually being genuine. So I make what makes me laugh, and I love that other people have found it and been like, I fucking love this, and I look forward to it. And I'd love to make that more, you know, on a larger scale.
Yeah, definitely. And I definitely think it would work. You brought up Tina Fey, and I meant to talk about this. You do the Philly accent.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
She's the only other person. Like, I guess I've never met anyone from there. So she is the only other person that I've heard do that accent on SNL and stuff.
Yeah.
And you guys, it must be, like, a very particular accent because you both sound very similar.
You know, it's kind of like Baltimore, you know, Philadelphia, where I grew up in South Jersey. You know, everybody kind of talks like this. You know, a lot of my family, they all talk like this. It's a real thick, kind of disgusting accent. All the vowels are, you know, really drawn out. You know, you get a towel, which is a towel. You know, it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, $400, $100. You know, it's that type of accent, like, you know, gymnastics, my daughter, that kind of it. But she, you know, I actually have a lot of parallels with Tina Fey. Both grew up outside of Philadelphia. We both speak German, which I think is really interesting. And we both do sketch comedy. But it is an accent that if I hear it while I'm at work, it's the only time I'll ask people, where are you from? Because I know they're at least from Delaware, South Jersey, you know, the suburbs of Philly, somewhere in Pennsylvania. Like, it's a very specific accent. But it's the mid-Atlantic accent. So when I do it, people are like, that's what Baltimore sounds like too. That's not Philadelphia. And I'm like, all right, well, it's a mid-Atlantic accent, so it encompasses a small little area of cities. But yeah, it's It's vile, but it's home.
Well, knowing that that's kind of where the accent comes from, it kind of makes sense, because like parts of it, like you're talking about the elongated vowels, it kind of reminds me of how some Southern people talk.
Yeah.
And the way they pronounce words.
Yeah, I mean, American accents are really, really interesting, like mm-hmm. especially along the East Coast. You can, you know, from Maine to Florida, you can just do like a smooth transition. I've read that the current Southern accent is what people in Shakespearean England actually sounded like, which is the most interesting thing I've ever read. And yeah, that Southern accent is, they say, a lot closer to what like ancestors, you know, our forefathers, when they came to America, what it actually sounded like.
That is very interesting. Yeah, I love accents. Have you always done accents yourself?
You know, I've never trained to do accents, but I've been a little parakeet since I was a kid. I've always found it really interesting. And I think part of that comes from my mom and my dad both having accents. I was obsessed with television as a little kid. It was everything to me. Movies and TV, entertainment. I was glued from a very young age. So in doing so, you realize that there is, you know, you have that standard American accent, which is like the Midwestern, right? I think they say, you know, it's like neutral, supposedly. Yeah. So you hear that accent a lot on television and, you know, in movies. And then to have a mom, you know, who talk like this, you know, like, oh, that she has an accent. I would hear my dad, you know, who kind of had like the Philadelphia accent because he was born there. You know, you could hear it. And everybody, all my parents' friends had that Philadelphia accent. Or that, you know, mid-Atlantic accent. So growing up, I was very aware that, one, I did not want to sound like that, which is like so elitist, but I like trained myself. And sometimes my friends catch me with certain words and they're like, oh, I forget that like you grew up in that area and you do pronounce things differently. And I'm like, God damn it. I've trained so hard to get this accent out of my brain. But yeah, I've always really loved it. I love British television as well. I watched a lot of British TV as a kid. So the British accent was always very, very ingrained in my mind as well.
Are you a Absolutely Fabulous fan?
Absolutely, darling. Of course. Absolutely. Cheers. Thanks a lot. Yeah. My God. Edwina. Yeah. Pats.
Yeah, no. Pats awesome.
Pats. Yeah. Helen Cumlicker's got a little pats in her.
Yeah, I can see that. I got. Yeah.
She's, you know, she's fabulous. Helen's a socialite. That's the greatest thing about Helen is that, you know, Helen's not angry. She's just upset that she's old because she's lived such an amazing life and she just wants to keep living it. But like, she's done everything. She's done everybody. She's seen everything. She's met everybody in New York. She's fabulously wealthy, you know, and that's why she's really so crotchety, not because she hates everybody, but because you guys are not as cool as everybody that she's hung out with her entire life. Like, she hung out with Andy Warhol. Like, you're fucking lame. That's why, you know, so that's where I draw on like the Patsy Stone type quality.
Yeah. I really like your characters. They're all like strong women and they all have like these backgrounds that we don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
Like little pieces come out, you know, from time to time, but you know, watching it and, you know, hearing you say you know a show, I'd love to see these characters maybe come to the screen, you know, to the TV screen or computer.
Well, yeah, I would love, what the dream for me is to obviously start fleshing out their life, because I have these characters that have been off screen, but the problem with TikTok is you kind of click and record and it's hard to be two characters in the same scene just because I'm wearing makeup and a wig. It's something that, yeah, I would like to show Helen's husband, Reinhardt, you know, her children, her grandchildren. I would love to look at who else works at the Dayton County Parks Department. You know, you have Mayor Larry the Possum, you have Rusty, her right-hand man. You have Mackenzie, the intern that Loretta hates. You have Camilla's entire family. You have Dom, Anthony, and Francesca. You know, you have all these people that like are, they're part of their world, but I just don't have the capability to show them right now.
Yeah. And yeah, we got to get this going.
Yeah.
Because seriously, yeah, there's so much to them. And, you know, starting out, you probably didn't even think, oh, there was going to be these families, you know, for these characters and stuff, did you?
No, I mean, it started as something where, like, again, I needed, for the joke to work, I needed these people to be talking to somebody. So I just thought, you know, with Camilla, like, you know, of course I know so many men from New Jersey named Dominic or Dom. And I was just like, yeah, Dom, that's a great name. My neighbor growing up, you know, my best friend was Francesca. I was like, that's a nice Italian girl's name, Francesca. And then Anthony. I know so many Anthony, Matthews, and Christophers growing up in New Jersey, I swear to God. So yeah, her son's name is Anthony. And I just, it just kind of happened. But then, you know, stick to it, because the funny part about it is when I mention these little details, the people watching the videos, like my followers, like really like learn these details. And then if I make like the slightest misstep, they're like, well, I thought this happened in the other video. You said that about the character that wasn't on screen in that video. And I'm like, oh fuck, I have to remember the canon of these characters because people remember it. And I have to, you know, keep up with everything and make sure that like my story's straight.
That is
the first time I did Loretta and I mentioned Rusty. It literally was just, I thought it would be funny if she was taught, cause it was about like some guy who was like a nerd, you know, just like making fun of somebody who like wanted to come to this event. And she's like, he's a fucking nerd, huh? Like Rusty, you know? And I just did it like real off the cuff. And all the comments when I posted the video were like, who's Rusty? Where's Rusty? Why haven't we seen Rusty? Like, what is his relationship to Loretta? And I was like, oh shit. Like, I thought this was a throwaway line and people are like latched onto it immediately. So I gotta like remember all these details.
So it's Halloween. And so I want to ask you, and I feel like you're going to be, this is a great question for you. What has been your favorite Halloween costumes? It can be when you're younger, older, a variation.
Ooh, God, that's so tough. That's a tough question. I love Halloween. Obviously, I've loved it since I was a little kid. I think all gay guys love Halloween. When I was little, I had a really mean Darth Vader costume that my mom made that was amazing. She like put me in her friend's like little like kitten heel boots, which I love. I made a lady sailor outfit one time for Halloween when I was in college. And I had like a red like finger curl wig. That was fun because I looked just like Gina Davis. My goal Halloween costumes, I definitely want to do ABBA at one point. I want to wear those little the cat tunics that they have, the yellow and blue cat tunics. This year I'm going as Ginger Spice.
Okay.
Alone. I do not have other Spice Girls, but I figured she's the most iconic and I have the Union Jack dress and I just really wanted to do it. And I was like, fuck it, I'm doing it.
I can't wait to see that.
Last year, though, I was very proud of my costume last year. I was Veruca Salt from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, yeah.
And I made the dress. I made the little red dress, which was super cute. I have, like, the wig that I actually used for Melania and Kathleen Murphy. I just, like, pinned it with little barrettes on the side. And I got a big gold balloon, and I just held it to be the golden egg. I was very proud of that costume. I'm almost 6'3" and I was in like a little girl's dress with Mary Janes and white stockings on, walking around Brooklyn in the middle of the day to go to my friend's house. So it was quite a sight.
Is there anything you want to plug?
Not really. I mean, people can be on the lookout for a merch store that is in the process. I get a lot of messages about merch. That was another, you know, uncharted territory. I am the creative end of things, but I've had to become the business end of things, which it's learning experience. You know, I always tell, you know, my agents and, you know, people that I've worked with on that side of things, I understand that this is art, but it is also a business because any product that you're putting out there, you need to be responsible for and you need to know what you're doing and protect yourself. So it's been a good learning experience for me to figure out, you know, the financials and working with companies and finding out, you know, your suppliers and working with graphic designers and, you know, paying them good wages. You know, I'm not trying to steal things from anybody. The good part is, you know, I'm a one-man writing team. So I basically have intellectual property and copyrights off of everything that I've put out. But, you know, I'm not a graphic designer. I'm not a t-shirt maker. I'm not a businessman, and you just gotta learn as you go.
I think that is very smart though that you are kind of taking the time to learn, because I see some people, not that I've interviewed, but some people that like I see them kind of building and it seems like they kind of get swallowed up by the business side and then you don't see nearly as much of the creative side.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being on the show today.
Oh my God, it was such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And if you guys want to follow Sean, again, it's Sean with an E, and it's at Sean Barry Parsons on TikTok, Instagram. Are you anywhere else?
Oh, God, no. I don't have a Snapchat. When I was growing up, that was just for illicit pictures and, you know, weed that you were about to smoke. So I don't have one of those.
All right. I really hope you enjoyed that interview with Sean Barry Parsons. Again, be sure to follow him on TikTok at Sean Barry Parsons, and definitely add him on Instagram. He is very active on it, and his stories really are like bonus material.
You can find the podcast on everything at It's Jake Pod. You can follow me personally on TikTok at RealJakeLX. If you have any questions regarding this episode or a past episode, send me a message at email heyitsjake@gmail.com. Just let me know in the subject line what episode you are referencing. There will be an email episode in the future. Be sure to subscribe to this show if you haven't already and leave a 5-star review. It does wonders for the show. Don't forget to also share it with somebody because sharing is caring. Thank you for listening and subscribing, and another great episode with another great content creator is coming your way next week.